Riker heard somebody groan in the dark. The smell of lubricant. New ship. The groaning came again. His own. Riker's head throbbed. He heard a voice.
Wake up, Will.
It was Captain Bateson.
Captain, where are we?
They stuck us in an ASRV. You, me, and Scotty in this life pod.
Riker's eyes focused on the unconscious form of Mr. Scott, lying against the other bulkhead of the very small life pod. Bateson pulled Riker into a sitting position.
Kozara separated the crews and put all my men from the Bozeman on his ship and set it adrift. He intends to use the Enterprise to attack Cardassian holdings.
Where's everybody else?
Locked somewhere below or in other pods.
Riker shook his head as if to clear his thoughts.
How do you know all this if you were unconscious too?
I guess Kozara gave me a stimulant to wake me. He wanted the pleasure of telling me face to face what he's planning.
Stumbling to his feet, Riker braced himself against the wall. His body pulsed with aches left over from the stun grenade. Even before reaching the hatch control panel, he could see through the dimness that the panel was shattered. Bateson explained.
They took a disruptor to it. Guess they're not planning to visit us anytime soon.
We have to notify Starfleet somehow. Tell them the ship's been taken and that Kozara intends to attack Cardassian holdings.
Maybe they can notify Captain Picard. He's in Cardassian space.
How do you know that?
Admiral Farrow assured me when he gave me command of the ship that Captain Picard had his own concerns. He was going on a mission to Cardassia Prime on behalf of Federation nationals being held there.
Begging your pardon, sir, but why would Admiral Farrow inform you of Captain Picard's mission?
Well, for one thing, it's not a classified mission. For another, I was reluctant to take command unless Captain Picard had other choices.
A groan heaved across the deck, and Engineer Scott rolled over. Riker knelt at his side.
Wake up, Scotty. We need you.
Ugh. Stun grenades. I hate those damn. I thought they were illegal.
The senior engineer glanced around and fought for focus.
Where the devil are we?
ASRV. The hatch controls are blown.
Well, let's get out.
Mr. Scott, they blew the hatch control panel.
Scott pressed past Riker, completely ignoring the hatch controls. Near the lockers where the fold-out seats were stored was a small door. The sign on it read, Autonomous Survival and Recovery Vehicle, Extravehicular Garments. Scott tapped in a code, and beside him an environmental locker popped open. He pulled out a survival suit and instantly shuffled for the breastplate gas exchange and humidity thermal controls. He did something to the panel which Riker couldn't see in the dimness, then turned back to the hatch, slammed the breastplate up against the airlock hatch, punched the controls again. The airlock rolled open. Riker shook his head as he and Bateson followed Scott out into the dim corridor.
How'd you do that?
Oh, Mr. Riker, you'd have to take my course in alternative signals at the Academy. New term starts in September.
Scotty, you're a miracle worker.
No, lad. I'm an engineer.
Then you can tell us. Is there a way to communicate with Starfleet?
Sure. If Kozara and his playmates haven't figured out the auxiliary broadcast cutoff, I can send a limited coded subspace message from one of the Jeffries tubes. There's one right around the bend.
Within seconds, Riker was helping Scott climb into the tube's maw. Riker glanced over his shoulder at Bateson.
Sir, I suggest we run a guerrilla operation from down here. Make the ship unworkable for them. Capture or isolate as many of Kozara's crew as possible.
Whatever battens your hatch, Mr. Riker.
Captain, what's wrong?
What's wrong? I blew it. Permission to gloat, Mr. Riker. Will you just get it over with? I can see the galaxy is a more complicated place than when I was a real captain. At least rub it in a little so I don't feel so pathetic.
Sir, you had a one-dimensional distrust of Klingons because that's what you needed to survive in your time. And there weren't many older Klingons fighting. Since then, they've learned the value of their older warriors' experience. Cultures change, Captain.
Still, Kozara wouldn't have taken the ship if I'd withdrawn when you recommended it.
Sir,
he wouldn't have taken this ship either way without a saboteur on board.
Riker held out a hand of truce to Bateson.
Captain, I know about ships of the line from this era. You know about Klingons, not as a culture, but as enemies. If I'm going to coordinate a counteroffensive from below decks, what do you know about Klingons that you think I should know?
I'm sure you know they're basically fearless. They never hesitate when there's an opening, never back down, never think twice. And one thing I've always counted on is that Klingons tend to get angry and stay angry. I've always thought that humans have an advantage because after a point, our adrenaline levels out and we tend to calm down and start being sneaky.
Good. I think we can use that. What else?
Well, their system tends to put a whole lot of people on the front lines who all have the same talents and the same weaknesses as each other. You got 10 Klingons, you got 10 Klingons. But you got 10 humans. You got 10 really different ways of doing almost anything. That's why the Klingons were never able to beat the Federation. We've got them all figured out, and they can't make sense of us. At least that's the way it was 90 years ago.
Riker started to feel as if they really did have some advantages.
We'll have to take the ship back, or at least make it unusable to Kozara. To do it, we need to use Kozara against himself. And I know how.
How? By having a sense of humor.
I like that. A sense of humor can be a formidable weapon against somebody who doesn't have one.
Scotty started backing down the tube. While he made a final adjustment of some mysterious kind, he said,
Aye, we can use that to reduce their numbers. I've got a hell of a sense of humor.
Riker helped Scott down from the tube.
Did you get the message sent, Mr. Scott?
Aye, I did. Low power's the best I could do. It'll take a while, maybe 4 hours, to reach Starbase.
Riker turned to face Bateson.
Permission to begin assault on the hijackers.
All right, Will. You're in charge of the covert assault team. Gentlemen, let's start thinking dirty tricks, but with one condition, Commander. I don't want to kill any of them.
Riker openly gawked.
Sir, Kozara is planning to fly into Cardassian space and unleash quantum torpedoes on millions of innocent people. Pardon me, sir, but it's no time for a message between Robin Hood and the sheriff.
It's exactly the time. Non-lethal assault will leave them baffled about the Federation's intents. We've got to keep the Empire confused about us. You recall that Kozara wouldn't say he destroyed the Nora Nichols. I think he disabled them and left them adrift somewhere. Kozara wouldn't want the Empire saddled with the slaughter of a whole ship and crew if things go sour. Until I'm sure he's killed our men, I don't want to kill his.
Well, that does make some sense. Let's hope it keeps making sense. Because if they did kill the crew of the Nora Nichols, then the war's already started. Let's get going.
The pounding feet of booted Klingons set the whole corridor shuddering. But Will Riker was shuddering well enough on his own as he ran along the curved corridor, just keeping enough of the curve between him and the 6 Klingons chasing him. Captain Bateson waved to Riker from inside a doorway. Bateson disappeared inside the darkened room, and Riker plunged in after him and instantly flattened himself up against the wall. An instant later, 6 Klingons came piling into the room, stinking of sweat and panting with blood hunger. Riker slipped back out the door behind them, and Bateson was immediately after. Then Riker slammed his hand into the door control panel.
Hurry, Scotty. Turn on the program.
Down the corridor, about 10 feet, Scott worked at another panel.
Computer on. Holodeck 2. Run holoprogram 1-1 continuous presentation.
Shut it down. Program off. Program off. Look for the door.
Riker and Bateson joined the beaming Mr. Scott down the hall.
What did you do to them, Mr. Scott?
I sent them to my great-uncle's poultry farm. Lots of feathers and bird iguano to slip around on. Round, 45,000 chickens, give or take the odd Christmas goose. And for every one they kill, the computer makes 2 more.
Riker threw his head back and laughed.
6 Klingons and 45,000 chickens?
Scott brushed his hands together triumphantly.
And they'll never find the door.
The Cardassian warship came in for a landing in what looked to Picard like the bombed-out part of a Federation colony. It was, he knew, a Madrid village, a penal camp where the Federation captives were forced to fight for their lives against Cardassian attackers. In this way, Cardassians learned how Starfleet personnel and Federation nationals reacted in battle. If the prisoners fought well and won, they were given subsistence rations and allowed to live to fight another day. If they refused to fight or fought badly, they were of no further use to the Cardassians. Within the Madrid village, the Federation captives huddled in their makeshift bunkers, watching the warship settle onto the cracked and pocked pavement. Lieutenant Steve McClellan, now the leader of the beleaguered captives, stared at the vessel. What a massive and ugly thing it was. Its hull of flinty scales, its windowless body, its hungry weapons arrays. A ramp dropped down. Foggy light from inside the craft obscured the humanoid forms that appeared at the top of the ramp. One, two, three, four figures. And one. One was human. McClellan knew he had to take the chance. Ignoring the pleas of the others to stay down, he stood and walked toward the three Cardassians and the human. He was sweating through what was left of his uniform and shivering. Two Cardassians stopped when they saw him, guards both armed. A shiver ran up McClellan's spine as he anticipated the shock of an energy bolt from those weapons. Then the third Cardassian hung back, and the human came forward. He was wearing plain black clothing, no uniform or insignia of any kind.
Lieutenant, I'm Captain Jean-Luc Picard, Starfleet. Are you in command? Where is Captain Fernando?
Affirmative, sir. Lieutenant Stephen McClellan, sir. I regret to report that all our senior officers, including Captain Fernando, are dead.
McClellan, I'm sorry.
Tentative after so many months, the captives came forward, the lights from the Cardassian ship revealing the clothing that hung on their thinned bodies. Picard raised his voice now so all who were beginning to cluster around would hear.
You'll all be going home.
Then Picard turned toward the nearest Cardassian, the only one not carrying a weapon.
Come here, Madrid.
Steve McClellan flinched. Was this a trick? The creature who had dominated their lives since capture came forward. Steve remembered his face from hours upon hours of torture. Fear crackled from man to man. Madrid faced forward, looked out at the gaggle of castaways.
My apologies. I have stolen your lives. They will now be given back. The other installations will be purged also.
Then Madrid turned to Picard.
All right, Captain. You've proven to me that you are no longer merely a benign tumor. You are a barracuda. You have what you wanted. Now I want my daughter.
That's up to her, Madrid.
We had a bargain. I want her back. Bring her here.
Oh, she's coming. Picard to Half Moon. Captain Reynolds, commence beam down.
A human woman, a Klingon, and a young Cardassian female materialized. Madrid was clearly relieved.
Jilora, how are you, my child?
Father, I wish to explain. I am the one who contacted the Federation and told them about your prisoners. I told them you were holding Federation Nationals and Klingons and Romulans, Orions, Deltans, Lansai, and at least one Andorian. And I told them where to find you.
Why would you do this, daughter? You lied to me. You said that the enemies of Cardassia deserved their fates, and you were their fate. You said we must be vigilant against all who are not Cardassian. Then I found out you were also capturing and torturing Cardassians. You even have Cardassian Madrid villages. How could you do that? Using your own people as experiments.
My own child. You are a traitor. I am a Cardassian, and I'm more loyal than you are. Cardassia has to have a future, and your kind of brutality will be bad for us in the long run.
How can you do this to your father? I love you.
And I love you. But I want to sleep at night.
Picard stepped forward just as his comm unit interrupted.
Sir, this is Captain Reynolds. We've been sent an emergency communique from Starbase 12. Sir, the Enterprise has been hijacked. It's warped into Cardassian space not too far from here, and it's cutting up signal outposts on its way to Cardassia Prime.
Who in God's name hijacked it?
A Klingon called Kozara.
What about the Cardassians?
Their defense fleet's massed on the Dominion and Klingon defense perimeters. All but two fighter transports. Starbase wants to know if you have a suggestion for heading off the Enterprise.
Picard turned to face McClellan and the other Starfleet personnel.
I had been hoping to take you home for a well-earned rest, but as you've heard, the new Enterprise E has been commandeered. The Klingon commander is threatening to unleash the power of the Federation's new flagship on the innocent civilians of Cardassia Prime and its surrounding settlements. As the senior Starfleet officer in the sector, I'm taking charge of the situation. Mr. McClellan, I intend to appropriate two more Cardassian ships of the class you see behind me. I'm conferring upon you a field promotion to the rank of Lieutenant Commander. You'll take charge of one ship. You, Lieutenant Atherton of the satellite tender Tuscany, I believe, you'll take charge of the other ship. We also have with us the MFPS Half Moon, upon which we've mounted a swiveling dorsal turret phaser cannon in anticipation of close-quarter battle. I shall command the fleet. We may be liberating you, only to have you killed in the line of duty. The ships of the line called Enterprise have for generations been the forward symbol of Federation integrity in the galaxy. Now that is at stake. I'm offering you the opportunity to finally fight for something beyond yourselves, and to show the Cardassians what the Federation is really all about.
There was a moment's silence. Then McClellan let out a whoop and threw both hands into the air. Instantly, a bigger cheer erupted from all the former captives, a soul-raising shout of participation and hope. Picard reached for McClellan's hand.
Lieutenant, I'm proud of you. Starfleet is proud of all of you. The entire Federation owes all of you its pride and gratitude. Everyone, follow me on board. Our mission, stop the Enterprise.
Galon felt invigorated, serving next to Kozara, seeing Zaiden mystified by the technology of this great sweeping vessel they'd stolen. He was especially invigorated by the contents of his report to Kozara.
We have destroyed 16 outposts, primarily automated signaling centers. Few casualties. The Cardassian subspace communications crackle with terror at our presence. They know we will soon come to Cardassia Prime, and they have no fleet in this sector to stop a ship like this. Good, Galon. We will strike at the heart of Cardassia Prime and erase their government seat. Carry on.
As he returned to his post, Galon looked again at the bridge of the Enterprise E. So much power. And the interior, like artwork, like brushstrokes, like the Klingon sky before a storm. But there was also trouble on this ship. They had now lost contact with 38 members of their crew below decks. Malfunctions, perhaps, or mistakes. But Galon did not believe that, nor did Kozara. There was part of a Starfleet crew trapped below, and if some of the Starfleeters had broken free and debilitated the Klingons below, then time was against Kozara's plan. A Klingon reported from the helm.
Cardassia Prime in 53 minutes, Commander. Hold course and speed.
The words had barely left Kozara's mouth when Morgan Bateson and Will Riker came charging out of the lift, brandishing hand phasers. Riker took down two Klingons in what appeared to be phaser stun.
Hold them back! Galon, hold them!
Both Riker and Bateson dodged the disruptor fire that broke across the bridge. Riker raised his weapon to get in another shot and was stunned by a hard strike to the side of his head. Suddenly, the hand phaser was gone. His arms were shackled. His eyes gradually focused, and he saw Kozara standing over Bateson on the upper deck. Two Klingons came forward and hoisted Bateson to his feet.
What did you think, Bateson? I would take a ship only to let you steal it back.
Riker called from where he lay.
You may hold the bridge, Kazara, but the rest of the ship is ours.
All I need is the bridge. Our traveling is nearly over. I need no precision to cut apart a planet. This ship's reputation will be like flies upon dung in the street. There will never be another Enterprise when I finish with it.
Kozara's first officer, Galen, came to life from the tactical panel.
Commander, contacts, 3-4 vessels, 3 bear standard Cardassian configuration, emissions and signals. 4th ship, unfamiliar. Federation emission, possibly armed.
Bateson lashed out.
What is it, Kozara? Because you were embarrassed once, you'll now slaughter millions? There's honor.
Zaiden, the son of Kozara, swung his long arm and clipped Bateson hard across the jawline. Bateson's head snapped back, but he stayed on his feet somehow. Bateson wiped his bleeding lip.
Kozara, do you let this boy decide the course of your actions? Let's speak across the years to each other. You're involving everyone today. My crew, your crew, the Cardassians, the Federation, your empire. But this isn't about all those other people. It was always about you and me.
Do you think I am fool enough to fight you hand to hand when I already hold the advantage?
No. I don't want to fight you now. You'd turn me into oatmeal. I'm trying to tell you that you came here and took my ship from me. Kozara, you've already won.
Kozara stared at Bateson, who spread his hands in a gesture of surrender.
Was it over?
Galen called to Kozara from tactical.
Commander, the 4 ships are blocking our way.
Warn them back, Galen.
I did. The lead ship is hailing us.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard, commanding this defense fleet. We are armed and ready to stop your assault on Cardassia Prime. Starfleet has been notified. Within 1 hour, the starships Hood and Defiant will arrive. Until then, our 4 ships stand between you and the Cardassian homeworld. If you attack this formation or any Cardassian holdings, I will consider it an act of war against the United Federation of Planets. Think before you take action. Your entire empire will pay for your choice.
Zaiden shouted,
Shoot! Kill them! They cannot threaten us! Shoot Picard out of the sky and I will call you father again. If you do this, you will redeem yourself.
Kozara erupted.
Myself? None of this is for myself. Do you still fail to understand? There is more in this galaxy than myself and yourself. You greedy imbecile, stand away from me. Take your feet up from the deck of this fine ship whose halls you do not deserve to walk. I was going to incinerate the Cardassian homeworld to undo the past for you. Since we embarked together, I have heard nothing but your contempt and complaints, and they begin to gnaw on me. Riker, Bateson, these men have fought their way back to their bridge. They deserve to keep it. Galen, shields down.
Zaiden swung around to breathe fire at his father.
You will destroy them all for me. You promised.
A fool's promise is not binding, brat. I may be your shame, but you are mine.
Enraged, Zaiden whirled around to Morgan Bateson.
I will smash you for what you stole from me.
Kozara moved between them and knocked his son back a pace.
Get away from him, boy. He is too worthy for such as you. Now that I have this ship in my hands, and I look at you, Zaiden, I begin to think in another way. Why should my last action as a Klingon commander be on your behalf? Must honor go only from the father to the son? Whatever turns the fates vomited upon me, I never whined like a brat. I never blamed anyone else for my failures. This human is better than I care to admit, better than my son.
Kozara turned away from Zaiden and opened the comlink.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, this is Commander Kozara of the Klingon Advance Assault Squadron. Come and take this ship. I no longer want it.
Mr. Riker, do you have control of the bridge?
Bateson turned to Riker.
Tell him the bridge is ours, Mr. Riker. I'd like him to beam over. Captain, we have the bridge. Captain Bateson requests that you beam over immediately.
Around the bridge, Kozara's crewmen stood in surreal satisfaction. Whatever they had come here to do, they didn't want to do it on Zaiden's behalf. Odd, they'd been willing to slaughter a planet, a civilization, at Kozara's bidding, and now they just as easily stood down at his whim. With new respect, Riker watched Kozara. There must be something in him for his crew to do this astonishing thing. A moment later, Jean-Luc Picard was materializing on the upper forward deck. Fully armed with a phaser rifle, this was a different Jean-Luc Picard than Riker had ever seen before. His bearing was supremely confident. He directed an order to the cluster of Klingons.
Stand down.
Bateson stepped forward with two Klingon disruptors he had collected.
They're stood down, Captain. Of his own choice, Kozara has decided to modify his course of action. He is not our prisoner. His men are not under guard.
Very good. Number one, take tactical and run a diagnostic on the ship's systems. Give me an overview.
Captain Bateson, your lip is bleeding. Are you hurt?
I'm all right. Sorry to spoil your fun.
Yes, I was rather looking forward to it. Where's your crew?
Set adrift on Kozara's ship back in the Typhon sector.
We'll pick them up. And the others?
Mostly they're locked below decks, in the pods and lower levels. We're breaking them out now. But what about your mission, Jean-Luc?
On those Cardassian ships out there are the crew of the Durant and the satellite tender Tuscany. At least those who are still alive. Their captains are commanding those ships.
Riker suddenly saw the tactical board light up.
Captain, I'm reading a Klingon warship on approach vector, fighter class.
He waited for orders, but didn't know which captain to look at to get them. Picard tilted his head at Bateson.
Captain Bateson, it's your command.
Bateson waved a hand.
Oh, no, sir. You took the bridge. I was a captive here. You're in command.
All right. Very well. Would you take tactical, please, Captain Bateson, and check on phaser power? Number one, please take the helm. Picard to engineering. Mr. Scott, do you read?
Scott here. Welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you. We've got a hostile encounter and we need phaser power.
Working on it, sir.
They could see the Klingon ship on their screen now. A strong warship rigged for battle. Picard gripped the arms of the command chair.
Hail the Klingon ship.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard, commanding the USS Enterprise. Identify yourselves and stand down immediately.
This is First Officer Gabriel Bush, flying the Imperial warship Klaka Maka Paka Yaka Your Mother's a Moose or something. Anybody know how to make this lobster tank go out of battle mode?
At the sound of that voice, Bateson grinned.
Gabe, are you all right?
I'm wicked good, sir. And so's Wiz and Mike and everybody.
Is that monster ship Kozara's?
Sure is. Sorry to be late. Took us a bit to get her moving again. Listen, we found the crew of the Nara Nichols. They're alive and well, stranded on a planet in Typhon.
Good news, Gabe. But there could be a saboteur on board working for the Klingons. We can't find him here.
We found him already, Morgan. It was John Wolfe. Only he's not the real John Wolfe. He must have killed the real Wolfe and taken his posting just before he transferred on board the Bozeman. Mike Dennis actually found him. When we figured out there'd been sabotage, he remembered that Wolfe was the one who told us nothing was wrong just before everything started going wrong. Anyway, under some creative encouragement, he fessed up.
Are you in command, Gabe?
Amazing, isn't it? You know what? Better watch out. I'll be after your job.
Glad to hear it. Stand by.
Smiling sentimentally, Bateson turned to Picard.
Captain, my crew is standing by for your orders.
Picard nodded.
Thank you. Actually, Captain Bateson, I'll leave it to you. If you like, you can take command of that ship and pilot it back to Starbase 12. Another trophy for your exhibit, perhaps?
Bateson considered the idea for a moment, then looked for a long few seconds, oddly, at Zaiden.
I don't really need another trophy.
He pushed off the tactical board and went to stand before his old rival, Kozara.
I, Captain Morgan Bateson, stand humbled before the Klingon, Kozara. I was your dishonor, and you chased me down. When the power to destroy our civilizations was in your hands, you found the strength in yourself to pause and think. You raised yourself above common revenge. You are a true commander. You deserve to be in your ship.
Kozara stared blankly, disbelieving what he had heard. Picard came to Bateson's side.
I agree. On the brink of interstellar conflict, we find a way to work together to stop it for the sake of old times. I will forward a record log of this to the Klingon High Council on your behalf, with my personal seal. You are honored among your enemies.
Gradually, the Klingon gathered himself and came to attention before the two Starfleet captains.
I accept.
It wasn't exactly a thank you, but it was as close as a Klingon would get. Picard then gave an order to his first officer.
Shipwide sweep transporter beam, Mr. Riker. Klingon physiology. Send these gentlemen back to their vessel.
Morgan Bateson and Jean-Luc Picard strode toward the crew lounge aboard the Enterprise, safely back in Starfleet control.
Jean-Luc, I hope this isn't inconveniencing you, but the crew insisted on a formal welcome for you as their official commander. Ah, Morgan. I have to confess that the ulterior motive is to give you and your crew a rousing send-off. I guess we've both been cornered.
Bateson paused before their proximity triggered the lounge door.
Jean-Luc, before we go in, let me say I admire you. You're an excellent synthesis of old and new. I hope you'll take my apology for my contributions to what happened. You were right about the Klingons, Morgan. They were massing to attack. The Cardassians were in their sights, but certainly the Federation wouldn't have been far after. If you hadn't provoked Kozara, their attack would have been better planned, less spontaneous, and probably far more deadly.
Picard read the unspoken questions in Bateson's eyes.
Morgan, we all have our inner questions. The past few days have helped me put into words many things I never considered about being captain. It's helped me a great deal, especially now.
Bateson grinned.
Now that you've been made official commander of the Enterprise E, she suits you better than she does me. I want to thank you for sticking up for me with the Admiralty and recommending reassignment. I thought they'd hang me. You're too valuable for that. Command of the Roderick is no desk assignment, Morgan. You'll be the last line of defense for whatever comes.
When Picard and Bateson entered the lounge, they stopped short. From wall to wall, the lounge was lined with Picard's crew and Bateson's. At the appearance of their captains, the happy crowd broke into applause and whistles. Picard and Bateson were pulled off to the buffet table, where Will Riker and Gabe Bush were waiting. Picard looked playfully stern.
Number one, I'll get you for this. Well, you're welcome, sir. We just wanted to make you feel at home.
Bateson grinned at his first officer.
Mr. Bush, how are you?
High and dry, sir. Looking forward to duty on board the Roderick. I think that ship fits us better.
Picard accepted a wine glass of a pleasantly scented burgundy and raised it immediately.
To our ships.
The intermingled crews cheered and raised the toast. When the glasses came down again, Picard addressed them.
I do have a bit of news for Captain Bateson and his crew. In appreciation for all you've done, for your sacrifice, and your resilience, Starfleet has accepted Mr. Riker's recommendation that at its launch next week, the USS Roderick will be redesignated the USS Bozeman II.
The crews were stunned silent for a moment, then erupted into a whoop of approval.
Picard was happy at this excellent turn of not very pleasant events. Everyone had what he wanted, including the newly assigned master of the 6th Starship Enterprise.
The year 2372. Captain's Ready Room, USS Enterprise, NCC 1701E.
Jean-Luc Picard dumped Riker's report on his ready room desk and shared a disgruntled glance with his first officer. Will Riker was not happy either.
Captain, why are we out chasing comets?
That wasn't the whole question, of course. The other end of it was something like, when the Borg are on the warpath again and making a straight line for Earth. Picard tried to answer.
Let's just say, Number One, that Starfleet has every confidence in the Enterprise and her crew. They're just not sure about her captain. They believe a man who was once captured and assimilated by the Borg should not be put in a situation where he would face them again. To do so would introduce an unstable element into a critical situation. That's ridiculous. Your experience with the Borg makes you the perfect man to lead this fight. Admiral Hayes disagrees with you.
Bridge to Captain Picard. We've just received word from the fleet. They've engaged the Borg.
I'll be right there. Number One, let's go.
Picard and Riker went through the ready room doors to the bridge.
Mr. Data, put Starfleet frequency 1486 on audio.
Aye, sir.
A chill struck Picard as he heard the sounds of desperation.
Flagship to Endeavor. Stand by to engage at grid A-15.
Defiant and Bozeman, fall back to mobile position 1.
Acknowledged.
We have it in visual range. Borg cube ship on course 0 mark 215.
We are the Borg. Lower your shields and surrender your ships.
All units, open fire.
Remodulate shield protection.
They've broken through the defense perimeter.
Cube is changing course 021 Mark 4.
We will add your biological and technical distinctiveness to our
own. Repeat, we need more ships.
Captain, report immediately.
96 dead.
Auxiliary warp drive. Flagship to Starfleet Command. We need reinforcements.
Warp core. Breach.
Resistance is futile.
The terrible voice crackled across Picard's skin. He knew that voice from deep inside. He knew that kind of intrusion, violation. He knew it. And he knew other things. He knew he was no longer that man. The Borg had changed him. And other things had changed him. New things. He saw the battle in his mind's eye, knew all the maneuvers the Federation ships, both Starfleet and private, would try to use against the Borg cube as it vectored in to threaten Earth, the hub of the Federation. And he knew they would all fail.
Mr. Hawk, set a course for Earth. Maximum warp.
He waited until the order had been executed. Then he turned to face all those who were gazing at him, astonished, confused.
I am about to commit a direct violation of our orders. Any of you who wish to object should do so now. It will be noted in my log.
Silence. Then Data spoke.
Captain, I believe I speak for everyone here when I say, to hell with our orders.
It took all Picard's fortitude to keep from breaking into a grin. This wasn't the time for that.
Red alert. All hands to battle stations. Engage.
As he stood in his ready room, Picard seemed to feel the ship around him throbbing with power. In less than 30 minutes, they would engage the Borg.
Number One, who invited you in?
Just a voice in the mist, sir.
Are you here to talk me out of this?
No, sir. I'm here to make sure you don't talk yourself out of it. No chance of that.
Riker joined Picard at the viewport, and together they looked out at open space. After a moment, Riker turned to his captain.
Morgan Bateson was right. He wanted preparedness. He thought there'd be trouble with the Klingons or Romulans or Cardassians. After all that, it turns out to be the Borg. Worse than all the others put together. Yes, Will, they are. The Bozeman, too, is in the defense perimeter. Bateson's going to face down the Borg. He's there with Gabe and the whole crew, still together. Bateson always knew his own mind. So did James Kirk. I admired that. When the Enterprise D was destroyed, I fell into a dangerous pattern of not accepting what I wanted all along. I wouldn't accept that my life had been irrevocably changed by being one of the very few captains of a starship Enterprise. I accept that now, and I take it as a solemn charge. I know that I want nothing else, and nothing more. We're all with you, Captain. Any action you take, we take with you. Thank you, Will. And carry on. Notify me the moment we come in sensor contact with the Borg.
Thinking of victory, Jean-Luc Picard strode to the replicator. Charged to the core and ready to spark, he squared his shoulders and drew a long, sustaining breath.
Tea. Japanese. Green. Chilled with ginseng and honey.
Star Trek, The Next Generation, Ship of the Line, was written by Diane Carey and read by Kevin Conway. It was adapted for audio by George Truitt. The recording engineer was Michael Jones. The tape editors were Rick Bradley and Fran Pierce. Post-production and sound design by Chris Gibbons and Fran Pierce. Original music was composed by Sam McCallie, Carl Schertz, Eve Baglarian, Michael Jones, David Lyles, and Richard Emmett. Theme music from the Star Trek television series was composed by Alexander Courage and Gene Roddenberry and used courtesy of Bruin Music. The associate producer was Florence Barreau Adams. Star Trek, The Next Generation, Ship of the Line, was produced and directed by Jan Werner. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Also available from Simon & Schuster Audio, Diane Carey's Star Trek, The Final Frontier, read by Leonard Nimoy and James Doohan. Star Trek, The Next Generation, Ship of the Line, is available in book form from Pocket Books.